Welcome to EduChat, the podcast that talks about technology in the classroom. I'm your host, Martin Coutts, and I am honoured to be joined by fellow ADE and I think fellow EdTech disruptor would probably be a good way to put it, Mr. Jacob Espen Hansen. Hello, Jacob.
Hello, Martin. Thank you. And good morning.
Yes, thanks for coming on. I know we've been trying to do this for a few days, but just with bad Wi-Fi in hotel rooms and sort of changes to schedules, it can be sometimes difficult to find some time.
Yeah,
so I do appreciate you. I do appreciate you taking the time to come and talk to us.
Likewise, I've been looking forward to have an opportunity to chat with you again.
Yeah, we had a sort of a good chance to chat when we met up over the summer in Amsterdam. So it wasn't too far a trip for you to come from Denmark to come over to the Netherlands. But yeah, I don't know about you, but I sometimes feel after Institute we never really get a chance to do a chat like this again. It's almost like Institute we have to do so much time to catch up, and then we don't really do it again for a year.
Yeah, it's just too busy sometimes with all the friends that are gathering at the institutes. It's some intense days, but I think it's a highlight for many of us, the institutes, and especially all the informal conversations that we have at institutes. They are really valuable.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of the added value that a lot of people who are maybe new to the community or don't know much about this sort of Apple Distinguished Educator community that we have don't realise, is that the informal chats are really, you know, that's really where ideas are formed and sort of plans for next things are formed, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly it is, yeah. Many good connections grow out of it.
Absolutely. Now, I know a lot about you, but people who are listening might not. So why don't you take a little bit of time and let the listeners know exactly who you are and what your why is?
Yeah. I'm Jacob, and I live in Denmark together with my family. I have a lovely wife that managed to love me with all the flaws that I have and crazy ideas. So I'm really enjoying that. We have two sons as well that are now in school, and I'm also at the board at the school, so I also work with education that way around. But I stumbled into education. Both my parents and some of my grandparents have been working in education. Mm-hmm. So as a kid, I dreamed about becoming an architect, and I wanted to do everything to avoid working in education.
Right.
Didn't manage to avoid that. But I'm actually a trained designer. I worked with industrial design and interaction design. Took a master degree in IT. And then suddenly I started working at a design school and had more and more to do also with the students there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got asked if I wanted to start a design and innovation or entrepreneurship program at a local high school. So suddenly I found myself teaching there and starting those subjects up at the high school. And now that's that's 10 years ago now, and have also been working with coding there and mm-hmm. been deeply involved in the iPad program that we rolled out and was one of the early one-to-one programs in Denmark with iPads. And then a couple of years ago, I started a high school program that was fully based on challenge-based learning, the mm-hmm. first high school program in Denmark that was that. So that was my journey, and now I'm actually taking a bit of time off, and I'm out of the classroom for the first time in a long time, and try to find my feet in working more freelance and trying new things out. So
wonderful. Do you think having a background that wasn't education, do you think sort of having a bit of time out of the classroom, obviously education, as you were saying, was a big part of your childhood and growing up. Do you think that having that time out of education to kind of explore something new, in your case, sort of design and your master degree in IT and these types of things, do you think doing that gave you an extra appreciation for what the classroom is like and what it actually means to be in the classroom and work with students?
Yeah, I think there's two factors that is playing into how I work with education.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I use my background in design and those methods quite actively. I have always worked with trying to create change in education. So either starting up programs, but also challenging the way we teach. So I think I've tried to use my design backgrounds and those methods quite actively in my everyday. But also when I look back at my own childhood, I wasn't enjoying school at all. And I also have dyslexia. And, right. and that wasn't recognized that early on. And I thought that I was struggling and just in a later on found out that I had to learn in a different way and that I have some dyslexia, but I also that I could use some other methods and that it wasn't a big handicap, and especially now with the technology. So I think my why is really for education is really that I want to change the status quo. And I really motivated by trying to create change. And I see too many schools that are look too familiar to what I experienced myself in my childhood. And
yeah, I think that's a fair point. I mean, if we're talking about the future of learning and sort of the education sector being the next one to be disrupted, what do you think is right now? Obviously, education's not stagnant, but certainly maybe the way we teach can. You know, I'm obviously a math teacher, and the way that I look at things, the way that maths is taught and the way that maths is delivered, it's not really changed much in maybe the past 100 years or so, in terms of, you know, you could look at a classroom of today and a classroom of yesterday,
yeah.
and the layout is the exact same, the way that it's taught is the exact same. So why do you think that is? Why do you think schools are so set in their ways? Do you think it comes down to results, or do you think there's something deeper lying there?
I think traditionally also change has maybe been a bit slower pace and the role of a teacher was also to have the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that role of being the one having the knowledge and passing that on is now changing. But I think for hundreds of years, it has functioned quite well to go through school yourself. And then those who had easy with that, they may maybe be going into teaching. And I think when we look at education today, when we look at how we structure education, how we structure the school day, that they have, it's divided up to subjects. Then they have a subject, then they have a short break. Then there's a bell ringing so that they know they should come into then for the next class and so on. And when we look at all those elements, I think they are mainly a result of tradition.
Yes.
The first schools, they were linked to the churches. The churches, they had school bells or a church bell. And now this bell is still ringing, even if... And I think the most of what we are doing in school is a result of a long way of traditions and not based on what we actually need in the future. And I think right now we are in a time where we can see that the world is definitely not static, and the main purpose of education is to prepare our kids for the future. So it shouldn't not only make sense right now, when they look back in 20 or 30 years and are in the middle of their work life, they should look back and think, okay, what I made together with Jacob or Martin 25 years ago was actually relevant for what I'm doing today. And we know that there will be a lot of changes coming to us. And
absolutely. I think the best way to look at it is the jobs that have come up in like maybe the past 10 years and the amount of data that has come up in the past 5 years. I think there's a stat I was reading that 95% of the entire data that has been collected in the world was collected in the last 5 years. I mean, that's a staggering statistic. And when you look at the amount of changes that we've had, and you know, you're talking about iPads going one-to-one. I mean, the iPad's only 10 years old next year.
Yeah.
The iPhone is only 12 years old. You know, we're looking at disruptive technology that is still only maybe in, you know, we call it primary six, but, you know, it's children who went to school 10 years ago. Children who were born 10 years ago have not experienced anything other than this technology.
It's so funny. My two kids, they are 11 and 8 years old. And my older son, he sometimes says to his little brother, Do you know, when I was born, the iPad weren't invented yet.
I know. It's quite staggering to think of it that way. It's also that kind of way where the skills for life, the skills for learning, the skills for work that we're trying to equip in our young children and our young learners, we don't actually know what some of the jobs are going to be. I mean, app developer was a very niche kind of job for people to do, you know, 10 years ago. But now it's with, you know, programs like Everyone Can Code and the ability to program an app much easier. It's not making an app is easier, but I think access to those tools has become easier. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. And I think also just that it's much more relevant for a huge number of people to be able not to maybe develop their own app, but that will land in some kind of jobs where they have to communicate with people that are developing software and are developing programs. So I think that it's much more relevant now than we could have imagined 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that relevancy is the word that you're kind of that's kind of hit the nail on the head for me with that word, because it's relevancy. Do we need to teach children how to, you know, how to sit there and pass an exam that has a mathematical equation that's 2-3 pages long? Or is it more, what is the application of that information once you have the answer? I mean, computers and calculators and iPads and all of these types of things can do the calculation for you. What they can't do is then apply that data. They can't apply that answer. Yeah. They can't sort of use that answer to make a relevant hypothesis, a relevant theory, a relevant, you know. And I think sort of pushing kids towards the application of their knowledge and how they can be creative with that answer or with that result that they get is a good way forward. Tell me about this birthday party that you were at and the conversation you had around it. You were telling me a bit about this.
We were at a birthday party at my wife's family and her granddad, 59 years old now, so nearly 100 years, and then we were talking about all the changes that he has witnessed. And at the end of the day, where people slowed down, some were leaving and so on, he was looking at some of his grandsons and daughters and their kids. They were playing with their kids as well.
So 95 years old, he's got his grandchildren there, he's got his children, and in some cases, even his great-grandchildren.
Yeah. Amazing. And he was looking at them, and the grandchildren and the grand-grandchildren had taken pictures on their phones, were sharing them, but airdropping them back and forth and editing some pictures from the day and so on. And he also just said, when I was that age, if someone had told me that would be the future, I would have laughed at it. I would never have imagined it. It would just be too crazy. That ability to take pictures instantly, seeing them, sharing them.
Yeah.
And also sharing them with people on the other side of the world. She said that would not have been possible just to imagine that.
Absolutely. So I think
that shows this rate that things are accelerating.
And but yet, also, if he was to walk into a classroom, if he was to walk into a classroom in the way that some of the tradition, would he see that same change?
Sadly not, I think.
Yeah.
Also, when we are seeing so many places in the world where they are discussing if they should ban the use of mobile technology in the classroom, it's devastating that we have those discussions.
It is.
Instead of discussing how we should use the technology in a clever way.
Yeah, I think what the problem with that is when they're talking about banning them is, and you'll agree, I think you'll agree with this because it's the same sort of discussion that seems to happen, is that it's the wrong conversation that's happening. People are talking about the technology coming in and, you know, will a robot replace your teacher? Well, the answer to that is a resounding no. You know, you can't. You can have someone deliver the information, but it's, again, it comes back to this application of the information, this application of the knowledge. The teacher still becomes the person at the front of the class who is helping children understand how to use it. And, you know, it's an interesting conversation to have in terms of what the future scenarios are going to look like. Tell me a little bit about this dark and bright scenario stuff that you've been looking at.
Yeah, so right now I've taken a bit of time in my life where I think both try to slow down a bit and take a year where I want to really look into those future scenarios for education, but also just travel to schools and then work with that theme. But when I look ahead right now, I think some of the technologies that are just right around the corner where we are using now, so like 5G, artificial intelligence, augmented reality,
but also machine learning,
and maybe in 5 or 10 years, biohacking, CRISPR technology, how we are beginning to edit in our DNA and so on. I think looking into those technologies, I think they will all impact education. And I think we can sometimes see some very, very positive use cases and some individualized learning. I think the conditions for that are going to be much better. When a well-qualified teacher is working together with artificial intelligence, it would be much easier to individualize learning for every kid. Learners, they can learn with their friends from around the world. I think physical distance will not be an issue in the same way.
Learning without borders. I mean, teaching and learning is teaching and learning. It doesn't matter if you're in Denmark, doesn't matter if you're in Scotland. The way that we, our vision for education and the way that we are wanting learners to approach their learning and to be equipped is the same. So yeah, I totally agree with that one.
Yeah, and I think so we can make up a lot of very positive use cases, and kids can develop their own learning resources and share them and improve on each other. And I think there's so many really interesting possibilities. But also, having been involved in a lot of one-to-one projects around the world, I also see a tendency, you said also, the iPad is nearly 10 years old. I think we all started with projects that were really driven by great vision and ideas. But I also see more and more municipalities where cost is driving the decisions on which platform to use. It should be easy to test kids. So that is a much more important factor than how they are actually learning it, what kind of content they are producing it, and so on. So I see also a world where we are often letting cost drive the decisions. And in that perspective, if we look at how could we actually use artificial intelligence, face recognition, tracking, and so on in bad, harmful ways, or I think also there could be some very sinister future dystopian versions of how we can use technology just to give us the most needed education for the masses in the most cheap way as possible. So I think also we should sometimes have those sinister, not be blind that we could also misuse that
technology. Do you think that's what scares a few people, that this sort of, like you say, dystopian future where, you know, think Minority Report, where you're walking through the mall and all of the ads are targeted to you based on like just your DNA or your eye scan? Do you think that's what people have seen in the movies and what people have heard about your information being stolen and putting things online? I was having a conversation with my mother over the weekend. She was up visiting and we were talking about digital banking. She's been a little reluctant to switch over to digital banking. And the more I was thinking about it, the more I thought that this was a good analogy for technology use in education. So my mum is 60, coming up for 68, sort of getting to that age where she's a little concerned about what technology can and can't do. But mostly it's what her understanding of that technology looks like. She doesn't fully understand it, so therefore it is scary to her. So we were talking about switching her over to digital banking simply because she still goes in and out of the bank to pay her credit card. She still goes in and out of the bank to lift money to pay, you know, to give my children some money when she comes up and visits her grandchildren. She's still very much set in a mindset from a few years ago because technology scares her. And when we were going through this conversation and I was saying, right, here are the positives. You can have access to your money at any point. You don't have to go in and speak to someone and say, I would like to do this with my money. You just open up your banking app and you do what you want to. It's your data. It's your money. But her question was, but by having digital banking, does that not mean that people can easily get in and steal my money? And I think it was this fear of the unknown. It was this fear of not knowing. So I had to take a few minutes and explain to her exactly what it all meant. Hmm. And once she had a better understanding of how it looked, once she had this better understanding of what was possible and that it was all safe, it was all secure, no one was going to come and, you know, I kept saying to her, Mum, as much as I love you, no one in, you know, another country is really interested that you've spent £20 on magazines. You know, no one's, I was trying to tell Mum that as wonderful as she is, her data wasn't that, you know, her data was secure and no one would really want to steal her data. You know, and I think by having that, doing what we do and going into schools and exemplifying the positives and accentuating the positives, speaking to people about the possibilities with technology, but also giving them a little bit of an explanation about why. And I think this word why is the important part. You're saying about disrupting education, you're saying about moving on from tradition so that we can equip our youngsters with the necessary skills. That's a wonderful why.
Yeah, I think definitely we have to embrace technology and see the positive possibilities. But I think actually at the same time, we should be aware that there will also be people that will implement technologies with the purpose of reducing costs maybe and streamlining processes, and will look at education as a much more simple activity of putting knowledge into kids' heads as fast and cheap as possible. Yeah. So I think it's important to be aware of how can we actually embrace that technology and have an impact on how we are going to use technology in education and having those discussions. And in our classrooms, I think it's important that we are showing them all the great possibilities, but also are reading novels like George Orwell and that we are also having discussions with our students about how valuable their own data is and how big companies like Amazon and so on are living, making a living of knowing a lot about a lot of people, having access to big data, how valuable it can this be in it. A business setup. This so I think it. Those I think, discussions we need to have in the classroom.
Absolutely. I think that's an important fact as well. Is again, at the weekend, I was having a conversation. I was in a shop and someone was asked me a question. I was wearing a jacket that had a particular logo on it, and someone asked if I knew a lot about that. And she was saying she was wanting to get her grandson a phone. Her grandson being the same age as my eldest boy Toby, who's 10. Now Toby's got an iPhone. He's got an Apple Watch, but what he does with that is locked down. And I think it comes down to the fact that I know what can happen with data. Yeah. He doesn't necessarily know because he's not been told. Grandparents don't necessarily know because they've not been told. But this grandmother was saying, oh, yes, he's wanting it so that he can go on to apps like Snapchat and TikTok. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but he's 10 years old. Yeah. Legally, he can't. He has to be 13 to get onto those. Yes, but everybody does it, was the response.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, just because everyone does it, that, you know, think of the lemmings effect. Just because everyone jumps off the cliff doesn't necessarily mean that you need to go too. So, Jacob, let's take it back to that conversation in class. What are some of the approaches in class that we can do to become more future focused in education? What are some of the challenges we can do?
Yeah, to go back to you also talked about that we often discuss if you should have mobile technology in the mm-hmm. classroom at all. I think, of course, for example, Snapchat, as you said, they need to be 13, and I think everything at the right age. But I think also that we should find this kind of sandbox or a playground where some things about digital technology, they only can learn by using it. So yeah. I think that would be one argument for not just forbidding mobile technology in the classroom. But I think then we have to find out how do we make the setup so that they can explore it relatively safely and maybe sometimes fail, but without the huge consequences. And then from there, learn it. So I think you have to use digital technologies and social media platforms to become more aware of them. And I think today I don't use Facebook.
No, same.
Very much, maybe once a week or two times a month or something like that. I still have my account, but not on my main devices. And I don't want to be tracked where I am and so on. But
likewise,
wouldn't know that if I hadn't used it. So
yes. So do you think challenge-based learning is a way to kind of approach this in the classroom?
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, that is not maybe the solution for all schools and for all learners. I think we need a variety of different schools that are doing it differently. But I think challenge-based learning is definitely a very interesting route for many schools, especially for some of those students that maybe are struggling in more traditional setups. Mm-hmm. I think it's very motivating to actually work the way we have worked with challenge-based learning in this high school program that I set up. It was always together with real-world companies.
Okay,
so it wasn't good. So it wasn't the teachers that were setting up the assignments. We of course had discussions with those companies before and designed the challenges together with them. But the day when the students got the challenge, it was the company that a person from the company standing in front of them and telling them, we would like help to this and this and this.
Okay,
and we teachers, we were much more consultants that then tried to help them and say, okay, if you want to solve that challenge, you actually need to know something about photosynthesis. As a designer, I would maybe see, okay, you need to know something about usability if you need to solve it with an app and so on.
Yeah.
And I think that makes education much more engaging, and they can develop those skills that they can directly transfer.
Yeah, I like that. I like the fact that you've had companies come in, and it's actually these are the type of skills we are looking for in our prospective employees. If you're wanting to work for, and you can think of the developer of the app Just Press Record is in the same town. He's just they stay just a few doors down from where I am, and we've spoken about getting them into schools and actually talk to them about, designing doing an app challenge. This is the type of skills that we're looking at, not just an app developer, but someone who can collaborate, can communicate, can solve problems, can bring it all together. And I think bringing in companies actually gives that connection for pupils, actually shows them that this is, this is what it's going to look like when you leave school. It's not just, can you sit and write a 5,000 word essay, but can you actually take skills that you have learned in maths, in biology, in social studies, and can you bring them together to solve problems?
Yeah, and I think bringing those companies in is definitely giving this realistic, very motivating feel to it.
Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting to hear your plans for bringing in a local app developer company. And I think, as you also know, those new resources from Apple are brilliant for giving a learning portfolio for how to develop an app. And I think Apple has put out so many great resources in that area right now.
I think so. And I think with EU Code Week coming up, it's a good way to sort of get the conversation around not just this is how you code, but this is how you approach, computational thinking. Tell me a little bit about the work that you did in that area in the Ukraine recently.
Yeah, just last weekend, I came back from a trip to Ukraine and were working there with a couple of schools. And that was around Everyone Can Code, mainly for the Swift playgrounds. And it was so interesting to see having those discussions with the teachers there. But also, it wasn't really new to them to think like, how can we actually integrate this in our curriculum?
Uh-huh.
I think they, it was so interesting to see that we were on the same page, having the same ideas about how can we actually make interesting projects where they are developing apps and how can we integrate that in our... So we were spending a lot of time with the playbook that Apple has made for it.
Okay.
We can put that into the show notes as well.
Yeah, please. Where definitely.
Yeah. So one way to start would also be that they develop an idea for an app and visualize it, but without any coding. And then we were also working with Swift Playgrounds and looked into how they can introduce kids to computational thinking and that way of solving problems. So that was the two sides of it that we were working with.
Excellent. And I like the fact that you're saying that you're talking about the computational thinking, because I think when other schools and maybe teachers who haven't had a chance to have that worthwhile conversation that you said was happening with the teachers in Ukraine, I think when some teachers just go in and use an app like Scratch, or they go in and use something like, you know, they use something that's basically games-based approach to coding, they miss the vital skills. They focus on getting through as many puzzles or as many problems as they can without necessarily taking some time to say, right, can you actually, yes, you know how to use that app, but can you actually think like a coder now? Can you think like someone who approaches problems logically, who looks at design, who looks at what this is, user experience, and how these are all very, very important. I think I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, Kurt Kleinen, recently, and it was on another podcast that I do. And one of the things that came up was content consumer versus content creator, and how to be a good content creator, you actually have to be an experienced content consumer.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you need to recognize what makes good design. You have to recognize what makes a good user experience, which is why I love that app development keynote deck that's there, because it focuses on the design and the flow of an app.
But the interesting part also is when you're teaching kids or young people those skills, that you really mess the way up that they are consuming content. Because I could just sit there and enjoy an app. Now I'm actually thinking about the workflow, the colors and the contrast.
It's so interesting to see
when they're making that change, that they suddenly are consuming with that in the back of their mind and actually are analyzing the things that they're consuming.
Absolutely. And for me when I was working with the pupils recently doing that challenge, a lot of them were looking at some of the things that they already do, and the fact that nothing, they were already looking at where the gap in the market was. You know, they were saying, we do this, we watch this on YouTube, or we watch this here, or we play this sort of game, but what's missing is this connection between X and Y. And I'm sitting there going, right, you've actually just done a little bit of market analysis.
Yeah.
You've just looked at what the market needs, where the gap is, and now you're using your... I mean, that's a brilliant process to see kids get there organically without any sort of direction, without any push. They just come up with what they need to know. That's a great thing to see. Jacob, we're obviously talking on my podcast, but you have one of your own, don't you?
Yeah. I've just started a new podcast and inspired by the last institute in Amsterdam that I call Breakfast Conversations.
Tell us a wee bit about that.
Yeah. So to be honest, I think the idea started because both I really enjoy those informal conversations of the institute.
Yeah.
But also having been at ADE since 2015. And when I became a part of the program, I was involved in this very successful one-to-one program at one of the biggest schools in Denmark. And Apple has just featured me in one of their commercials, and everything was going very, very well.
Yeah.
So I came into the community. And it's nearly a bit embarrassing to say, but I felt that I was a part of a special community, but maybe even a bit more special.
Yeah, okay.
Because everyone could recognize me and so on. And then I had, I think, a couple of years also where things were going well, but
yeah.
Then I also struggled and I had a huge workload. we got my father got cancer, and everything was at once, and then I had a couple of years where I really was struggling, both professionally, finding the right direction, weren't sure if I still had found my why.
Mm-hmm.
And also just having very severe stress symptoms. And at the same time, I knew that I wanted to see the first students of Flow Factory, this challenge-based high school, graduate. Yeah. So I just continued working, even if I knew that my heart rhythm was irregular and so on. So that was some very, very tough years.
Mm-hmm.
But the ADE community, they were there no matter what. And I found that crazy amount of support in that community. And especially in Austin previous summer,
yeah.
I really realized that how important that community were, and that I definitely was more special compared to anybody else, that everyone in that community has an amazing story to share. And then again in Amsterdam, I thought, it is so fascinating to sometimes shut up and not tell your own story, but just listen to the stories that other people have.
Yeah.
So that was my main inspiration for it. So the podcast are mainly dedicated to the new ADEs of 2019.
Okay.
And we just...
So that's why I have not been on.
Yeah. And then we have those... So trying to put a bit of spotlight to those people that have amazing stories, but maybe haven't bragged about them yet, as we others have. So to give them the opportunity to share their interesting ideas.
Good.
So that's the main focus with it, is actually just to sit down half an hour and speak about their passion.
That's good. That's a nice sort of, I think it's quite inspiring to hear that, you know, there's a lot of educators who have been through sort of various things. And I think you've kind of looked at it from the right approach, is that what we go through personally is very, very, you know, it's very stressful and it's very time consuming, and it can feel like it takes up all of our energy. But knowing that there is a community out there that almost becomes like a family in a way, you know, you get to know people very well. There's sort of little, you know, it's like you've got cousins, you've got that crazy uncle, you've got the people that feel like they've been there for a long, long time. But it's when we all come together, we all want to listen. You know, there's an old adage that when you talk to someone, if you're engaged in the conversation, you take interest, you respond. Instead of just waiting for your turn to speak, which some conversations tend to be, they tend to be people just, you know, nodding and then waiting for. But Institute isn't like that. Institute is, you know, you can always, I think it was Simon Pyle that called it the Pac-Man conversation, where, you know, you stand in a kind of Pac-Man shape around a circle, and there's always a space for someone to come in and join in if they want to, which I love. And I think that's a kind of a great approach to take in a podcast.
Yeah, and I think that is what we see in that community. And also, it could be so many else. I think traveling to Ukraine last weekend, I found that the same, that for that podcast, I interview every distinguished educators, but having the Twitter chats and seeing Apple teachers. And I think that's, of course, in this world, also teachers that are reluctant to change and that are a bit grumpy and don't want to change education. But if we have the time to sit down, I think most educators, they have actually quite wonderful stories and actually a real passion in making a difference in the life of kids. And that's so interesting to unlock that story and to get them to open up and tell.
Okay, Jacob. So you've obviously been talking about your podcast, which is quite important to you. But have you got anything else that's coming up that might be of interest to educators and leaders?
Yeah, we have talked a lot about change in education and how we can create that necessary change.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time right now to try to make some talks and workshops for that. And I have also, in my conversations with other teachers and school leaders, often had that, Yeah, but we can't predict the future. The future will be uncertain. So what I see right now is that a lot of schools, they are maybe not assuming that the world is static, but they are still viewing education or approaching education as if it was static, because we can't predict the future. So we are doing as we are always done. So I have tried to make a series of very, very basic questions just to open up those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes just to say, okay, we know that we can't predict the future exactly. We don't have this magic crystal ball we can look into. But sometimes it's easier to approach if we are asking us some very, very basic questions. So, for example, I'm trying to tell them, is the world going to be less connected in the future?
Of course, yeah.
So, it's quite obvious. No.
Yeah.
We will be even more connected. Is the world going to be less digital? Probably not.
No chances are.
Definitely not.
Unless something majorly happens where we lose all the... But we won't go into that.
A metro strikes us. Is the world going to be less complex? Certainly, definitely not.
No.
So I think those basic assumptions will open up a discussion, so that early on we talked about, should we ban mobile technology in the classroom and so on. So if we can all agree on, okay, it's going to be more connected globally, it's going to be hyper-digital compared to where we are today, the world is going to be complex as it is today, so what kind of skills should we then teach? And that leads us a bit back to those challenge-based learning skills and future skills, I think. But also, when we talk with school leaders about this uncertainty, okay, we know that we will live in an uncertain future where we can't predict exactly what will happen. So adaptability will be a necessary good skill to have. How could we teach people to be highly adaptable for new situations?
Absolutely.
And I think also that would be prepare kids for lifelong learning. And how can we actually then starting design school programs and schools where we not only are focused on the learning that happens with the kids today, but are much more focused on both that they are learning today, but that they also have got much more aware of how they are learning and how they can pursue on being on a lifelong learning journey.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to look at, is these skills that pupils develop, not just for their learning, but for their life and for their work. So how are you doing this with, are these kind of things that you're going into schools and having conversations with, or are you running like local seminars? How are you approaching this?
So right now I have a couple of schools that I'm going to visit over the next weeks and months, where we are trying out some of those resources.
Okay.
Just to have those conversations and I think it would be very, very interesting to have those conversations across students,
mm-hmm.
educators, school leaders, and politicians. I think actually it's so interesting in those workshops when they actually are hearing each other and their reflections on that. And some of the other questions that dive much more into, will there in the future be a scarcity of resources? Uh-huh. Will we have solved all the problems about sustainability? Probably not. So I think that will also open up a lot of possibilities for new school programs. Say, okay, how can we actually work with the sustainability goals of the UN? Yeah. How I think that will open up for a lot of interesting jobs in the future to be able to work with those big problems.
I love that. It's kind of, I think what's fascinating about that for me is you're kind of looking at this not just as, you know, not just as what it looks like in the classroom, but also, you know, almost making like responsible citizens. You're bringing sort of citizenship and global awareness and all of these things that pupils need to fully be aware of, because, you know, young people are more connected to what is going on around them than they have ever been before. They're more aware of the pressures that are facing, you know, both from a resource point of view, but from a, you know, can we sustain what we have? Can we sustain what, you know, what we need? Can we produce enough so that people are living longer? There's obviously going to be there's more pressure on resources. So I think the fact that you're looking at equipping them with those necessary skills to actually approach all aspects of their lives and careers. I love that. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, and I think that's so wonderful that you're saying that, because some of the later questions, that is exactly something about what is human value actually? Should we compete with AI, or should we have much more focus on collaborating? How are we as human collaborating with artificial intelligence, and how are we actually creating value together with it, instead of seeing it as something that is just taking our jobs and say, no, no, it will not take the jobs, it will transform the jobs, but we will still have a role where we can actually add some value to it. But also say, school should not only prepare us for our working life, it should also prepare us for having a good life in general.
Yes.
And how can we actually, what is a good life in the future, and how can we prepare for that?
I think it's this symbiosis. I think it's working together and working in partnership. It's it's a balance. It's not, you know, technology hasn't taken over what we do. Technology has made what we do much easier. It's a, you know, there's this phrase that goes around it, it's a smaller world. We were chatting earlier about you know, how connected you were talking about your children's great grandfather who's 95 and seen. I remember when my son was born 10 years ago, my mother was actually on vacation. She was away on vacation abroad, but I was able to send her a picture of her first grandchild.
Yeah.
And she was able to see him within, you know, she was able to see him within minutes of him being born. You know, if we compare that to what it was like where people had to come up and visit, and, you know, you still have that visit, but you're not waiting. That's not your first view of the child. That's not, and just like leaving school shouldn't be your first view and your first approach as to how you tackle the things out there. You should leave school already, you know, equipped with the skills that you need, not to get, well, not just to get a job, but also how to become a better person, for lack of a better term.
So I think actually also this involvement in technology can give us a huge opportunity to have a much more focus on having a focus on human dignity, human values. How can school prepare us to be good at, we are not robots, we shouldn't compete with them, we should be able to use them, but we should also really have a focus on what makes us uniquely human and value that in school.
Absolutely. And I think on that point, that's really a good place to stop. This was actually an additional recording that we did. People won't, that hopefully my edit is seamless enough that this will just flow in. But this was actually an additional, in true Apple style, we did a one more thing. But Jacob, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you this morning.
Yeah, but thank you for the opportunity to talk. Wonderful.
No problem. If people are wanting to chat to you more about disrupting education, about the future of education, where can they get in touch with you?
I think Twitter is the best way to get in touch with me. Mm-hmm. I spend way too much time on Twitter, but that's just because there are so many awesome people on Twitter that I just love to be connected with. And I think that's also some of the strongest connections sometimes in life. So Twitter, my handle is Jacob Espen.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And we'll put a link into your podcast and a link to all of your social media platforms. The show notes for this will be linked in your podcast app of choice. Jacob, again, thank you very much for your time, and have a great day and a great week.
Yeah, same to you, Martin.
Okay,
thank you for having the opportunity.
No problem. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
That about does it for this episode of EduChat. My thanks to Jacob Espen Hansen for taking the time to co-host with me. It was a thoroughly informative subject. This episode was made in partnership with Think Creative. Think Creative supports schools with bespoke training on the use of iPad in the classroom. This can be via team teaching or whole staff support. Get in touch via at Think Creative Ed or at Matt6453. Once again, that's at Think Creative Ed, all one word, or at Matt6453. My thanks to Think Creative for their support of this episode and all of EduChat. If you like this episode, please be sure to leave a rating and reviews. Podcast ratings help to keep this show relevant, and my thanks to all of you who are spreading the message on social media. I am very grateful and appreciate your support thoroughly. You can find show notes for this episode in your podcast app of choice. and you can follow me on Twitter at mcoots, C-O-U-T-T-S 81, and I will see you all next time. Thanks for listening. Bye.